CliffCentral.com. All right, CliffCentral.com. We are live. Leanne's just in the bathroom, but she'll be back in a moment. So stick around for that. She's, you know, she sometimes she gets the squirts and the COVID at the same time. So we'll wait for her in the meantime. Craig Urbani is with us this morning, which is very exciting. Craig, of course, is on a new show called We Will Rock You, which is in Johannesburg. Where can people get tickets, et cetera, et cetera? Where is it all taking place?
It's going to be at the Teatro at Monte Cassino, and tickets are at showtime.co.za. Awesome. If I'm going to make sure I'm correct on that.
I'll check you.
Deborah D'Souza will have me if I get this wrong. But it's showtime.co.
There we go.
Am I right?
Is that right? Yes.
Yes.
Showtime.
And we are at Monty at the Teatro from the 12th of March until the 16th.
That's become like the best place to do shows in South Africa.
I think so. I mean, I always loved Joburg Theatre. I always loved that venue. But I think
who wants to go into town?
I think there is that kind of that element to it. So so Monty the Teatro has become the kind of prime.
Yeah. No, I think
spot.
That's right.
Yeah, that's about right. Great theater.
So we got a couple of things to talk about here. First of all, apparently China has, and I love these stories when they come, especially from CNN, because you're not really ever sure how to believe in them or whether to believe in them or not at all. China is going to increase its defense spending by 7.2% and are setting an economic growth target around 5%, because otherwise they're in massive, massive trouble. If China isn't growing, then there's internal dissatisfaction. There isn't economic growth. There aren't jobs being created. There aren't people becoming richer. And in a country where everything's controlled centrally, it's very bad news, because people start to break away from that centrality. If everything's going well, everybody's on board.
Right.
But they seem like they're headed for a little bit of a disaster here. Of course, they've also got a huge population problem, because they've got more men than women by a long way. Because, of course, during the one-child policy time, there are a bunch of people who decided, no, we don't want a daughter. So the daughters were aborted.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And there were only sons. And
given up for adoption.
Yeah. And there are a lot of people in China who are saying, we are the last generation of China. They don't want to get married. They don't want to perpetuate the family legacy. There's none of that stuff going on. So it's a big problem.
They want to keep growing, but they have a population crisis. Is that
exactly?
Oh, okay. If they're not growing, then they have an economic crisis.
Either way, China is not looking as great as everybody about 5 years ago was saying they were.
Yeah, that they just had it.
It's not even for them. It's not
right.
Easy.
Yeah, right.
So there's something to think about there. And, you know, we often talk about kind of international stories, and this is going to be the biggest one, not just in terms of numbers and people, but in terms of the numbers of the economy.
Yeah.
So you got to watch what's happening in China. And it's interesting that this story also says that they're increasing their military budget to 1.55 trillion yuan. And that is because they have to also become more kind of territorially aggressive in order also to fulfill people's expectations inside of China. You know, right. They can't be on the back foot anymore, because for the longest time they play the long game. And now people are starting to say, ooh, looks like they're actually going to become a little more aggressive, a little more punchy internationally. We will see what that means. But there are two sessions since Xi Jinping secured a norm-breaking third term at the top of the Chinese Communist Party. He's set to enter his third term as president, a largely ceremonial title during the conference. Their GDP expanded by just 3% in 2022, missing the target of 5.5% by a wide margin. And now there's a lot of pressure, because it's the second lowest annual growth rate since 1976.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a huge amount of pressure. Trust me, whenever you think that there's a country that's doing better than you, you just have to look at their own problems and you think, I'd rather have mine. Certainly in some respects. Congo Chris says it's not just the men thing. The one-child policy bottlenecked the population. There's more pensioners than people paying tax.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
That causes economic collapse and unspoken truth of population collapse. So they're looking at that as well as being a major problem. So again, you got to pay attention to China. And then this is an interesting story. Computers powered by human brain cells may sound like science fiction, but a team of researchers in the US believes such machines, which are part of a new field called organoid intelligence. That sound horrible?
Organoid. I'm sure they could have come up with something better than that.
Sounds horrible, right? Yeah. Could shape the future, and they now have a plan to get there. Organoids are lab-grown tissues that resemble organs. three-dimensional structures, usually derived from stem cells, have been used in labs for nearly two decades, where scientists have been able to avoid harmful human or animal testing by experimenting on the stand-ins for kidneys, lungs, and other organs. So they make these things in the lab, and then they test those rather than on humans.
Than on humans, okay.
And it's better to test on those because they're not rats or, you know, gerbils.
Monkeys.
Or whatever.
They're not living creatures.
But also, these are actual human organs. Right. So they can test them without having to kill a person and without having to kill an animal. So obviously, it's a much more sensible way of doing it. But anyway, these brain organoids do not actually resemble tiny versions of the human brain, but the pen dot size cell structures contain neurons that are capable of brain-like functions that are forming a multitude of connections. Scientists call the phenomenon intelligence in a dish. This is fascinating. A guy called Dr. Thomas Hartung, who is a professor of environmental health and engineering at Johns Hopkins, they say that they've been growing many of these brain organoids by altering human skin samples since 2012. He and his colleagues envision combining the power of brain organoids into a type of biological hardware that is more energy efficient than a supercomputer. I mean, think about what your brain can do with, you know, a cup of coffee, let alone a proper meal. And then you think about how much power a supercomputer needs. So this is way more energy efficient. Plus, it seemingly can do a lot of the stuff that the computer can do, even though it's not a creature, it's just a bunch of neurons. So this is really on the cutting edge of what could be next. Yeah. Biocomputers. How does that make you feel?
That's crazy, man. I mean,
that's extraordinary.
Another place where humans can be replaced eventually, I suppose. Yeah?
I saw something just yesterday, how this scientist had revealed that he and his team were able to let mice age and then take the mouse's aging eye and reprogram the genes in the eye. They didn't take it out of the mouse. Let me just be clear. Mm-hmm. That sounded like they took it out of the mouse. They were able to, using some kind of genetic programming via surgery to the mouse's eyes, completely regenerate them. So the cells grew in time to become completely new, and the mouse had 20/20 vision. And that they are able to do that with any organ in the body, even the skin.
Bring it on.
And it's now at the phase where they're...
Craig is hoping one day he'll be younger than his fiance.
I'm going to be younger than Cindy. That's
it. Yeah. They're doing it at the moment. They're experimenting on, what did they call them? Non-human, but within our DNA range. So probably chimps, etc.
Yeah.
Which I don't like to hear about. But if they're making them younger and regenerating their cells, then that's okay.
If they're not,
can do it to any organ in the body, including the skin.
They're not testing makeup products in them and trying to kill them on purpose. They're actually doing stuff that helps the animals and will help us ultimately. But I mean, wouldn't it be cool? Because, you know, I've often spoken about the work of Ray Kurzweil, who's this futurist. He wrote a book called Live Long Enough to Live Forever. And I've probably read it two or three times just because it fascinates me on every level. The fact that we could eventually overcome, and this is where we started the show this morning, mortality.
Yes.
Right. And a doctor friend of mine just messaged me while we were talking about, you know, how cancer can be overcome, for example, and said more than 80% of the cancers are now curable. And this wasn't the case 40 years ago. You see, again, we hear about these things and we don't actually know what's going on the ground. Not all cancer is created equally. Some is worse than other. But those are the ones we can't yet beat. Apparently, there's an oncologist who can speak on this with some alacrity. We'll try and get that oncologist on the show because I think that would be
80% of cancers are curable.
80% of them are curable. So this is, you know, again, we kind of need to take stock of how far we've come instead of just complaining about how we still have things to beat. Mm. And if we could do things with neurons that could make, you know, our brains behave more like supercomputers, who's to say we won't be able to develop the kinds of computing abilities that your ChatGPTs and artificial intelligence are now capable of? I asked ChatGPT for just for fun the other day to summarize chapter 3 of Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace in one paragraph. And within seconds, it came back with a breakdown of kind of characters, what happens in terms of the plot in a paragraph. I mean, it could probably give me a bio on you that would be better than that, like all over the place intro I gave you. You know what I mean?
Anything would be better than that, Gary.
Yeah, I know.
No, I mean, it's terrible. Terrible. It's extraordinary. I mean, it's kids at school are just, they're not writing their own essays anymore.
No.
It's just like, hey, give me a little bit of that.
And I was talking to somebody who actually, they wrote their thesis on ChatGPT right in the beginning when they just started, like last year, making it public, handed it in, and the lecturers had no, they didn't know about it.
Didn't know what they were talking about.
Got the degree.
Wow.
Yeah, not difficult. I love that. So, I mean, again, if we could figure out ways of doing what Leanne said with the eye, for example.
Yeah.
No, you don't even need glasses. You don't even need LASIK surgery. A lot of these things go away and new things come in. You could go in and get gene therapy for your eyes. And next thing you know, the cataracts are gone. The lens is much more malleable. You get 20/20 vision in your 60s. That would be heaven.
Wow. But where will it end? Where will it go?
So you don't want to get to 100 and have a shitty body that's not keeping up with your mind, or vice versa, that you have a mind that's deteriorating, but your body's still good.
Yeah.
That's like where I said, you look like a 30-year-old from the back, but what about from the front?
Yeah, right. I mean, you can fix you can now fix the front, right? Ancient Ether says there are cancer patients out there who are living their best lives. Oh, yeah. And I know some of them too. But only when this friend of mine said 80% of them are curable did I actually think about it. And Marco, who's got a spinal cord injury, says this sounds great for spinal cord injuries. And let's not forget about Neuralink by Elon. For sure. For sure. Absolutely. If we are to live forever, will we lose our humanity? Life can't be pay to play, which is what will happen because it'll be expensive. Also, the reaper must have his harvest. Nobody should live forever.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. Where will it end if we can regenerate?
What do you think?
What'll
happen? Do you think if we live forever, everything else will collapse? Morality, values, religion? Because it will cause the end of some of those things.
Yeah. And the humanity aspect, you have to kind of, well, I think we have to live our lives like we know we don't have forever. You gotta seize the day, grab the moment, reap what you sow, all that kind of stuff. And if you have boundless, endless time, it just takes that kind of pressure off. You can get more wrong and without consequence.
Yeah. And you can really try everything that there is to try, yeah. Right? Most people go, oh no, I won't do that. I don't have time. I mean, I'm obsessed with wasting time, obsessed to the point where I will forego probably some very good things in my life just because I'm terrified of wasting time.
Right. But there's no consequence. You can't live consequence free without accountability or without consequence. I think that's dangerous. I think you're right.
That's probably true. Leanne and Craig, and if you're listening to us, think about this one. Someone posited this question the other day. Imagine you could find out, you could go to an oracle, or, you know, you could go on to ChatGPT and ask it, when will I die? Would you want to know the answer? If they were always right, they were never wrong. In other words, that would be definitive. So it would say to you, on your 35th day of being 86, you're gone.
New history.
And you knew that was exactly the amount of time you had left. Would that alter the way you behaved?
I would imagine it definitely would, and I wouldn't want to know.
You wouldn't want to know?
No.
Would you want to know, Leanne?
I don't need to because of my hypochondria and anxiety. I think I'm going to die every day, every minute.
That's
of
true.
Every day.
Yeah,
I mean, on an aeroplane, I think I'm going to die as many times as I breathe in and breathe out. That's how many times a thought crosses my mind.
You are such a disaster. We should just get Dr. Hanan on for you every Monday. We'd never run out of material.
Breathe in, I'm going to die. Breathe out. Breathe in, we're going to die. Breathe out.
Oh, my God. All right. So here's a good question from AAR for all of us. Would you rather have a shitty body and a decent mind at 80 or vice versa? That's something I've thought about a lot. No, well, come it depends. On. It's a good would you rather. Answer it.
No, if you decent think if mind. You're talking about a shitty body, do you mean that it looks terrible or that you have shitty lungs, shitty liver?
No, that you're in kidneys? that you're in pain and your body's not working properly. Oh. Who cares what you look like at 80 whatever, 80? What's it going to be? Would you rather lose your mind or be shitting all over yourself?
Oh,
it's interesting because my gran, who was a very proud woman in the way she looked, you know, she would, unfortunately, because of the generation she grew up in, she had wildly different ways of thinking about keeping slim, and would go for days without eating anything but maybe a licorice all sort. And she had a pretty fit body for someone her age, and yet she lost her mind due to dementia. And she always said, when she saw other women in that position, she said, "If I ever am like that, just shoot me one day." And unfortunately, that's what took her in the end. And her husband, my grandfather, was the complete opposite. He had diabetes and skin cancer, and his body was starting to fail him in so many ways. But his
you're going to inherit so much good shit here, Leanne. No wonder you're paranoid.
But his mind was 100%, and he died at the age of 102.
Wow.
With a completely sharp mind.
So what you would want to inherit is his mind and her body.
Then you're golden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe you have, but you're such a hypochondriac that you don't appreciate it. So
I mean, how many more years I might live until 102 thinking every day that I'm going to die?
Every breath.
Mongezi says Leanne would die instantly if the Oracle gave her the forecast.
Yeah, I would.
And Congo Chris, you see again, like Congo Chris says some pretty ridiculous and crazy things, but this is true. You should live your life like every day is your last. We only have, we all have to die one day. Every other day we should live. I think that's so right. And if I had to look, I think if the Oracle told me, I don't think it would change anything about the way I behave.
Oh, really? Well, that's good.
I don't think I would be any different in terms of the way I do things. I've got such a list of stuff to do, and I'm ticking them off slowly, and I'm trying my best to be present and to enjoy what I'm doing at every step. Now, there are obviously things that you have to plan for in the future and the things you have to think about in the past, but most of the time I'm here.
But that's, amazing that you can say that.
If here isn't working for me, I want to get out of it.
Right.
And I'll move on to what's next immediately, as quickly as I can. I mean, within reason. You can't be sitting at someone's wedding and thinking, "Oh, this is a waste of time. I'd rather be reading a book." So you have to you have to measure your behavior. But yeah, I think I'm getting better at.
Well, that's great. I mean, I don't know how many people can say that. I think that means you're doing it right. You're doing something right.
Hope so.
You're showing up for your life as you wanted to.
Yeah, I know there are some people who would not want to know at all, like you.
I think, I don't think I would want to know because I want to believe that I'm living like Congo Chris says, you know, that I'm making it count, that I'm being present, that I'm here, that I'm doing my best, and I'm aware and I'm growing as Dr. Anand was saying, we got to grow, we got to learn and evolve. And I would like to believe I'm doing that. There was certainly periods of my life where I was a bit stagnant and, you know, coasting along, but I would like to think that now I'm getting a little closer to what you're talking about. I'm by no means there, but
maybe you're further than I am down that road. Who knows?
But fear. There's no fear. Must bugger off. That's what we must. For me, I need to.
This is Leanne's last show with us because she's going to die of COVID.
she's
definitely going to die of COVID.
Fear is what's got to go. Fear is what holds us back. Well, holds me back. I'll speak for myself.
Tracy says, "I'd rather lose my body than my mind. I also remind my husband that if my mind starts to go, just use a pillow and be firm."
Good. My mom has said the same kind of thing to me as you were saying earlier. Really. If that happens to me, just shoot me. Just take me out of the picture. Jeez. Yeah. I think a lot of us don't want to be, I think we think about what it's like for people around us if we lose our mind. I think that's horrible when they can see the shell of you, but you're not there. I think that's got to be one of the most.
We had this question.
Even if the shell is good, looking good, you know, it's been regenerated.
So this is the cool thing that I think we asked it on the show the other day. There's this red pill, blue pill thing. If you take the blue pill, you instantly get $10 million and you're exactly where you are in your life. But there's now $10 million for you to go and go crazy with, right? The red pill is you go back to age 25 or whatever it was. I can't remember exactly, but you have all the stuff in your brain that you have now. All the experience, everything else, but you're instantly rewound.
Oh, gosh.
It's not even a question for me. I'd choose the 26 with what I know now.
Yeah.
Because
me too.
$10 million would be nothing compared to what could be done then.
I could make that. Yeah.
In a week.
Because I would, yes, exactly. Wouldn't make all those wrong decisions. Absolutely. Now I would go back 26.
Isn't it amazing? That just shows you how much we can value if we've done nothing else in our lives, how much we can value our experience.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, that's what I think it is. If people who would choose the 10 million, I don't think that they really put any priority or any value on the things that they've learned, which is so sad because that's probably the whole point.
Even if you made it 100 million or a billion or whatever,
I'd still rather choose it.
Still doesn't matter.
Right.
Yeah. No. It wouldn't change my response. No, it wouldn't. I'd go back.
This is I mean, it's amazing, but it's also kind of depressing. So Steve says, I had a friend who went to Dignitas in Switzerland to euthanize himself.
Mm.
I mean, it is and it isn't depressing. And I'm not going to get into the pros and cons of like euthanasia right now, but because that's a whole other discussion that we don't want to go into. You know, it's enough. It's enough already. We're fantasizing about, you know, being able to take this pill and this happens or, you know, your eye can be regenerated or any of that stuff. I don't want us to get into the reality of like, oh God, there's going to be an end. Cause I think that's something everybody's dealing with on an existential level anyway. Right. And Pihleng is just reminding us about the important stuff in life. Don't forget to like and subscribe, everybody.
Like and subscribe.
There we go. And Cunning Stunt says you die when you finish your list. That is why you need lists and purpose.
Right.
And like for you in the entertainment business, did you ever hit a point, Craig, when you thought, I've done pretty much what South African entertainment can let me do? Because it is a small pool. It's a small world. You know everybody in the entertainment business. You've worked with a lot of these people before. Of course, they're new, young, brilliant people coming up all the time.
Sure.
But you'd kind of ticked it all off. Movies, TV, stage, you know, singing, dancing, acting, awards. You get to a point where you were like, is this it? Because I got there in radio.
Did you?
Yeah, long ago.
But don't you feel that then you can do things in radio that you haven't done yet? I mean, the medium the medium gives you endless possibilities. Like for me, not a lot of my career has been a plan. It's been more like a gift. A lot of what has happened has been gifts given to me, you know, opportunities that most of the time I've seized. Sometimes I've squandered and made some bad choices, but I could still play a role that could fulfill me more than any of the roles I've played previously on different levels. And I'm not talking about money or fame. I'm talking about fulfillment.
Okay. But then you got to explain this to me as well. And maybe there's a question a lot of us have got. When you play the same character, I don't know how long a season goes in theater or, you know, like this show, We Will Rock You, that you're doing now. So you're playing this Khashoggi guy. So how long do you have to play him and how do you keep yourself interested? Because you're not a dumb person who just trots out the same show every night.
Right.
How do you vary it enough to make it fun for you, which is so selfish, but also to give the audience what they came for?
I think that's where the discipline of entertaining comes into play. You know, it's all about spontaneity and in the moment, and you rehearse this thing and you get out there and you do it and it's opening night and it's a brand new experience for you and the audience. And then 3 months down the line, you're still going out there saying the same lines, doing the same thing. But for that audience member, it's still a brand new experience for them.
But you have to put yourself into their head.
And then you have to, that's where the discipline comes in. You have to make it like it's the first and last time you're ever going to do it.
I mean, I look at this just shows you how piss poor my discipline is compared to yours. Because once I've said something or asked someone something, whether it's in an interview or, you know, we've got some kind of scripted thing going on, or I'm like, I'm over it. If it doesn't vary a little bit, I'm the problem here.
Right.
Right.
So you would battle, well, not, it's not a problem. Maybe you're just not wired to be a sort of theater performer where you've got to learn to say the same things.
But you said the word discipline and you're right. It's
I think that's where the discipline comes in my industry, because you can't wake up in a foul mood and go and do a crappy performance on stage because you're not feeling up to it or
I take it out of my audience.
But you know, they've still paid the same money to come and watch me play, I don't know, Billy Flynn in Chicago. I can't dial it in that night because I've got a bit of a cold or I had a fight.
By the way, I take it out of my audience, but then they take it out of me when they're having
exactly.
A bad
day. You get your comeuppance. Yeah. So I suppose that's the discipline part of what we do. But I mean, people say that to teachers. How do you do the same thing every day, year after year? How do you,
yes.
And they say, well, I'm not.
Imagine teaching the same syllabus every year. Yeah. I mean, that takes you've got to put your own boredom aside.
Imagine Dr. Hanan having to sit and listen to people.
Listen to other people's shit. Can you imagine that job?
So I suppose it just depends on what fuels you and what interests you, what you're passionate about.
If there was a job that is diametrically opposed to mine, it's got to be a therapist. Because I can imagine nothing worse than listening to someone sob stories every fucking day.
But maybe you'd help people, Gareth. You'd like help them snap out of it quickly.
Oh, I'd be the one who'd had to be checked into a mental institution after the first 10 days of being a therapist. I'd be finished. Poor Dr. Hanan. I'm going to send him a gift today.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
He's earned it.
I'm going to send him a gift and maybe I'll send him a gun and he can get rid of that guy who was doing donuts in his driveway.
The Flymo. I don't know why I'm thinking Flymo. I just pictured a guy going,
wow. What would be the opposite job of what would be your perfect occupation? Have you thought about that? Like, have you ever thought about like a backup plan? You know, cause you're a successful entertainer, but that might not have happened. As you said, lucky breaks. You sound like a very, you're a very grateful human being. You sound like gratitude.
I am now. Yes.
Right.
I mean, there was
you weren't.
No. I was quite resentful and why am I not getting that? And why am I not doing this? And why is so and so doing better than me? But a lot of those questions have been answered for me. A lot of that was because of how I was living and choices I was making I was just being an ungrateful little, having a little pity party for 15 years of my life, basically.
But there was never a backup. Like you never thought, well, if I fail at this, I'm going to do that.
I've always had a dream to do radio. It's always been my kind of, but I suppose, is that a backup or is that still too closely related to what you, it's still entertaining?
I think if you and Alan Ford can get your act together and start the spotlight again.
Come on now.
It might be a good show
but
for you.
People have always said, Craig, if you didn't, if you weren't on stage or if you weren't, you know, what would you do? And I've always said, I'd love to do radio. So that's always been my kind of.
Leanne, backup. What about you?
I always thought that one day, the last thing I did in my life would be being a piano teacher. I do have like my grade, I think it's a grade 6 or 7, in piano.
That's good.
You've never brought a keyboard in and like played during all those parody songs we used to do about your boobs or you never offered to play the piano on your own parody song.
It's weird. It's like a different level for me that with piano. I never really bring it into anything else in my life. It was always a separate thing that I did for myself and in my own mind. Even though, I mean, saying that, I had a baby grand piano growing up, and so that I'd share my music with the whole neighborhood. But it was always a personal thing for me. Yeah. And I just imagine my piano teacher that, you know, taught me. And I always thought that's how I would eventually go out of the world, was teaching piano to people.
Everybody is telling me that I've got to watch Selective Outrage, Chris Rock's new show, which is apparently absolutely incredible. And I haven't watched it yet, so it's my homework for today. I've got to make sure I watch this because everyone is on about it. In fact, LeBung sent me a message yesterday to say if I haven't watched it, she's just not going to talk to me anymore. So I got to get onto that.
What's it on? Is it on Netflix? Okay. I've seen it advertised. Yeah. Yes.
It's a special, and apparently it's absolutely hilarious. He talks about Chris Rock Will Smith.
Yes, the Smack. Of course. Yeah.
He talks about Meghan and Harry. He talks about his entanglements with Jada Pinkett Smith. And like, there's a whole lot of interesting shit going on there. So I've got to watch that. Everybody's talking about it. So we must get into.
Has he got a thing where I saw something about the pre-show and then the show and then the after show? Is that what he's done? Like, you see him before the show.
I don't know.
I saw something advertised.
You're asking me. I have no idea.
Something on Netflix. There's the pre-show, the show, and the after show.
I'll get into that.
Yeah. But all right. Yeah.
Very good. So Leanne, you wanted to talk about, and I remember this was in the news. It was a big story when Dis-Chem and their hiring policy was the major talk of the town. And there were a whole lot of white people who were very upset because they put out a letter to say that no white people will be promoted and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then apparently there've been some boycotts, silent boycotts and not so silent ones. So it's 5 months later. You've got an update on that?
Yeah. I mean, when it first happened, there were calls for boycotts, and I still remember I happened to be going to a Dis-Chem at the time. And Dis-Chem didn't have the product I wanted. So I went to Clicks. And I felt like I was part of the boycott. In the meantime, it was just circumstantial.
You showed them.
But I did. I wondered, you know, how is this going to affect them? Everyone was like,
no one ever follows up on these things. They're like, oh, we're going to protest or whatever. And then a couple of months later, no one even remembers.
It was like that thing with Shell. No one's going to go fill up at Shell because they're doing explosions in the Wild Coast.
Right.
And then, you know, people are driving past and suddenly you stop and think, oh, I want to get a Coke Zero. Oh, I'm in a Shell. Oh, I forgot. I'm boycotting Shell. You know, so I think it's a similar kind of
thing. Exactly.
Slacktivism.
It's slacktivism, yes.
So what happened with these guys?
As it turns out, it really did hit the retail group. So Dis-Chem has reported a decline of between 5 to 8% in its white, colored, and Asian chronic medicine dispensary customers. And it has gained in black chronic medicine clients. So people who get their subscription medications, there were definitely less, white people going in, Asian and colored, and an increase in black clients. The revenue was also down. Apparently, they were trying to downplay it, saying, you know, but we've also gained so many customers. But apparently, the number of clients lost exceeded the number of clients gained.
So they're being punished. And you know what? Companies, if they do things that people in society don't like, you should punish them. You shouldn't just buy things. You should be conscious of what the hell you're buying. If you don't like a company because they test things on animals, don't buy their stuff. I know you do that, Leanne. You don't like to support companies that do horrible, inhumane testing on animals.
And
Craig was just talking about the whole Shell and fracking in the Karoo and testing off the Wild Coast. But you've got to stick to it. And this is proof that it can actually hit their bottom line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing as well is that these things are so hard to measure now because everyone's tightened up in terms of spending, just with costs increasing generally.
Sure.
So, you know, was this all about the memo, the fact that their bottom line is looking worse than it was before, or is it just consequential of what's happening around the world?
Yeah, you know what? I think activism, as long as you actually follow through, is great. And if you don't support some company because they do things that you don't agree with, then I have respect for you for that.
Yeah.
you know, as much as I'm not the kind of guy who joins in protests very easily, I've seen these people who are spray painting circles around potholes now and writing ANC there. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, and, that's great.
And I'm all for it. Yeah. I mean, this is a trend that's picking up all over the place, and it's embarrassing. But ahead of an election, which is still some time away, that is going to be a permanent reminder to people of, actually, you know what? If these guys knew what they were doing, this wouldn't be the situation. And I think for many people, yeah, good.
Nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with speaking your mind and taking a stand. Yeah, I agree with that as well. Yeah.
It'll keep us busy, that's for sure, because just looking at the latest statistics, there are currently 25 million potholes in South Africa.
Wow. That's not so many. I mean,
that's just CR SWAT in Boskrain, I think.
For every pothole, I'm just thinking, yeah, like for every pothole, there are 2.5 people, roughly.
So, out of you and your buddy, one of you needs to go out and spray it.
If the two of us go out together, we could fill the pothole. That's what we could do.
Cindy told me yesterday about, she said a local comedian who's doing a sort of David Attenborough thing on the potholes. He's going out and he's saying, now this one, and then how they like to come out during the rainy season. They appear much more during the rainy season. He's doing a whole David Attenborough thing on the potholes. I want to check it out.
That's amazing. Oh, by the way, we had Dr. Hanan on earlier this morning, and Cindy, who is now your fiance.
My fiance.
She was on there with us, and we are obviously doing a whole series with Dr. Hanan at the moment. And don't be shy, by the way. If Craig could do this, and he's a public personality, then you can do it too. Let us know if you've got some situation. It doesn't have to be with your significant other. It could be with someone at work, could be with someone in the family. It could be a friend where you're a bit stuck, where there's something you want Dr. Hanan to give his opinion on. Then let us know about that. Send us an email. contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will get on to Dr. Hanan and let him sort it out for you. Sometimes you need an objective third party to help you through these things.
Absolutely. Nothing wrong with asking for help.
Damn right. Okay, and then quickly one other thing before we get to talk to Vili from Waterfall, who I'm excited to have on the show again. Apparently, Leanne, this is an animal story. We love animal stories, but this is not so. This is not such a great story. There's a massive problem in False Bay in the Cape because sharks, who used to be the alpha predator, are now not. They're orcas that are in there.
Oh, wow.
And these orcas are killing sharks.
Yeah.
It's something that I spoke to Anthony Miederer, who's, he does blind history with me on Cliff Central. And he told me, because he's a massive shark fan, and he's someone who's been helping, you know, to put in these new shark nets that work on a completely different basis to the old ones. He's trying to conserve and look after sharks around the coastline of South Africa because they are a hugely endangered species, and we soon won't have any if that happens, just from a human point of view. But now the orcas are doing more damage than the sharks. I mean, to the sharks than humans. How many did this orca kill? Or there were two of them, right?
There were two orcas. They were a male pair. Very infamous along the in the False Bay area, in more or less what they're calling one sitting for an orca shark. I mean, orca whale. They went on a feeding frenzy, the two of them, and they killed 17 sharks in basically one sitting. This is according to marine biologists. They've been tracking these two sharks. They've named them Port and Starboard, and they're known to prey on several species of sharks. They found these two orcas repeatedly diving down in a small area for about 2 hours before they departed offshore. A few days later, they found the remains of 11 of 17 killed seven-gill sharks in Pearly Beach.
Jesus.
Wow. And seven-gill sharks can grow up to about 10 feet in length. And the thing is that you'd think, how much can they eat? They're not even eating the whole shark. They're tearing the sharks open and harvesting their livers.
They just eat the liver.
They eat the liver, and they also eat the
with some fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Right?
What? I don't understand.
Hannibal Lecter.
You know, because they're so iron rich, these livers, but they also eat the stomach contents of the sharks. Now,
and leave all the rest.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but if you've been to any of these sort of marine establishments, they sometimes open up the belly of a shark that's been, I don't know, killed in some way. And the one that I had visited had a number plate in its stomach. So sharks will eat basically anything.
Yes.
And these orcas are eating anything that the sharks eat.
Damn. Horrible.
Wow.
Horrible things.
So, yeah, apparently this is blowing.
Is this uncharacteristic behavior for orcas?
Not
certainly
really.
Sounds it.
They're known. No. They're actually known to, and it's horrible because they look so cute and I want them to be cute.
Yeah, there's black
not.
And white.
Yeah, they're beautiful, yeah.
They're known to like hunt baby sharks, baby sharks and baby dolphins.
Don't you earworm us. Don't you dare.
That have just been born, they kind of hunt the mother and the baby.
I was going to say there's some hilarious language going on in the comments. Carl DeSantis saying this is awkward.
This is awkward.
Spelled O-R-C. And then propaganda saying that's shocking.
Totally shocking.
They're having a whale of a time.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, speaking of having a whale of a time, there was a lavish annual World's Best International Property Award ceremony in the Savoy Hotel in London just recently. On the 2nd of February, Waterfall Management Company was awarded the best international mixed-use development for the incredible Waterfall City for the year 2022 to 23. It is the fifth time in 6 years that Waterfall City has beaten formidable competitors from all over the world to claim the top spot. So if you live in Waterfall in Johannesburg, you live in probably one of the best places in the world.
Wow.
Despite the fact that South Africa has all of its problems and everything else, these guys are running one of the world's most advanced smart cities with everything that's just absolutely thought through from top to bottom. And we've produced a couple of series with them here on Cliff Central, which is why we're really proud of the fact that Vili and his team at Waterfall City have been awarded this incredible and prestigious award. So, Vili, I wanted to get you on this morning, first of all, just to congratulate you, because this is an incredible achievement. I mean, 5 times in 6 years, and you beat Cyprus, Brazil, Qatar, Hong Kong. Entries were judged based on criteria from design layout and quality, architecture, services, security, innovation, originality, marketing, and a commitment to sustainability. It's like you ticked every single box. Congratulations, man.
Thank you, Gareth. I must say, it is an honor, and it is a huge team effort. These things don't happen if only one person is just involved. We've got a great team in Tasha de Twe, who writes it up, and I've got Martin as well. But they do the paperwork and the entry of the competition. But the real team, you know, it's consisting of my own team at the office, but then there's Attack, Baldwin, and a number of other companies that are all participating. And even this show is also included in our, or not this particular one, but the fact that we have had that program with you, all of that is included in our competition.
Well, I mean, so that's also, what a pleasure. I mean, listen, if we can take any credit at all, it's nothing compared to what you guys are doing. But to have produced this series, we had to have material that was worth talking about. We wanted people to know what was going on at Waterfall. And you guys really do think outside of the box about pretty much everything. You make sure that you do tick all the boxes. And I think for people who live in a country like South Africa, there are lots of problems. And, you know, municipalities struggle to keep up with not only maintenance of infrastructure, but thinking for the future, whereas you guys set this amazing and almost immaculate example of what could be done, even in a country like South Africa, even when we have all the difficulties that we do with the electrical grid and everything else. It seems to me like you are thinking the way all of us should be. And really, it's not just about the awards. I mean, you could probably teach us a ton about how to manage our own properties, our own lifestyles. And maybe that's one of the things that made us want to do these podcasts with you in the first place. I mean, they really are worth listening to. And I'd encourage anybody who wants to know why Waterfall City is such an amazing place to go and listen to the podcast from episode one of season one right through to where we are at the moment. But what is it? What do you think your secret is?
We don't wait for other people to tell us what to do and to ask them what to do. We just do it. We believe South Africa is a great country. Yes, and we do have problems, but if we sit and wait and we only talk about all the negativity around it, then we will all be negative and we will really be third world. But it doesn't have to be that that way. We must, we've got a lot of energy. We've got a lot of knowledge in our environment. And we've just decided that we are going to put all of that together and lead from the front. That's why I said earlier, it's a great team that we have. Ultimately, a city like this runs on infrastructure. And we have, from the word go, realized how important that is. You can take any one of all the bad examples that where things have gone wrong, is where people have not looked after the infrastructure that they have. Mm-hmm. In our case, we realized that, and we tried to go a little bit further than that. With our water landscaping. And so on. Many people say, "Yeah, but why are we doing it? It's just it's exclusive, etc." I'm saying no. It is firstly water-wise, because we've got indigenous grass and plants and so on. Secondly, it creates a nice atmosphere in which people can live. It's sometimes almost a tourist attraction. But a very, very important thing is that we are giving jobs to over 500 unskilled and other, which would have been otherwise unemployed people.
Correct.
So the whole thing has a big advantage where you have infrastructure. It's like that all over the world where people spend money and time on infrastructure. They create jobs. And and then the other thing is it does help us with electricity, with security. Sometimes people wonder, how can I say that? But if things are in place, grass is properly looked after, then you see very easily when people are out of place, when they shouldn't be there. So there's a number of things that we've learned. And I must say, the residents, the tenants, the partners at Waterfall, they all buy into it. So it's actually easy for me to just come and talk to you here about it, because there's so many people that are buying into that.
Well, tell us about the award, because I sketched a little bit of a picture. I mean, you went to the Savoy Hotel in London and you guys received that award there, which is incredible. It's just amazing that you've received it now, five times, which is absolutely incredible. What does the award mean to you and what does it mean to your team?
Well, let me put it this way. There's 126 countries that are participating in this. Well, all in different categories, not all of them necessarily in our category. But the main thing for us is we benchmark. We want to see what is out there. How can we be part of the best in the world? You'll find very few people in my team and also in the companies that are working here that just wants to be mediocre. All of us want to strive to be the best that we can be. And to do that, you must look at what the rest of the world's doing. And that is assisting us a lot. So it's also credit to the people working here. I'm proud that I'm from South Africa. Every time we stand there, it's not like we feel ashamed of ourselves. We're very proud, and we're proud of South Africa. It's a great country. We just need to focus on the right things.
But you also received another award in Dubai, didn't you?
Yes, that was the first round, or actually the second round of this competition, where we won the best in Africa. That one, I think it's the ninth time in 8 years that we've won that. I must say, when you are in Dubai and you look at that environment, those people who have been fortunate enough to be there from a construction point of view. Mm-hmm. That's magnificent. And even when I walk around there, we don't have the same tall buildings and so on, but I don't feel ashamed of what we are doing. We have a few great things that that's going on here. Look, there's other places in South Africa where people also are doing these things. But we feel proud when we are there.
Well, I mean, I think I'd rather live in Waterfall City than in Dubai, but that's just me. I prefer, you know.
I must say, even I.
Yeah, so Billy, what is new and what's on your agenda for 2023? I mean, no pressure. You have to keep on upping the ante. You have to keep on winning these awards. So what are you guys doing at the moment? What are you thinking about at the moment?
There's a number of, well, from a construction point of view, there's a number of new head offices going up. People may be aware of the big Vantage. It's a data center building. They are also expanding on their development. This year, we're focusing a lot on improving our smart city technology, as well as looking at sustainability. You know, one of the things that worries us a lot is obviously the power shortage that we have, electricity shortage. Sure. So we work on a number of initiatives to see whether we can reduce our dependency on Eskom. So we've got a solar plant initiative at the moment. We've got two large engineering companies investigating that. And then we also are very concerned about the water situation. So we've got a major project going on where we are looking at rainwater harvesting, water extraction from the Exca River, which we are doing already, but to increase that because many people drive through here and sometimes, you know, they think we're wasting water, but it's very raw, sewer polluted water that we take and we treat that and we use that on our landscaping. But we want to see if we can't increase that to an even better level. And then from a technology point of view, you know, traffic is a very important component. We want to see how quickly we can change our traffic infrastructure to smart traffic lights. And hopefully take all of that off the grid so that at least the experience into and out of Waterfall City will be, you know, a good experience. Those are three of, let's say, the most important things that we are focusing on. So there's one other very important thing, and that's from an environmental point of view. You may be aware that we have over 100 hectares of green space, actually over 300 in total, but in the one particular development, just over 100. So we have decided that we are really going to focus on eradicating non-indigenous plants and focus on that. So those are our main focus points, plus then the construction of these new buildings.
And yeah, those of us who are not lucky enough to live in Waterfall City, we can still drive. We can drive through and can see how well it's. We can drive by and look at how it's possible to live.
How the other half lives.
Yeah, I mean the things that you've just said, really, in one paragraph or in one soundbite, how we would love to hear that from our government.
Well, I heard Willy has been approached to be mayor of Johannesburg, and he just said no straight up. He's not interested. He's like, I don't want that job. No, it's terrible. A horrible job, that.
What can I say? I don't think I envy any one of those people. They have their work cut out for themselves. So I'll just stick to what I'm doing at the moment.
Billy, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Again, congratulations on these awards and keep doing the amazing work you're doing. We're all watching what you're up to at Waterfall because I think everybody could learn from it, right?
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, very, very
thank
cool stuff.
Thank you very much, Gareth. I really nice enjoyed being on your program. Thank you.
Never a problem. Thank you, Billy. Billy Foss is the CEO of the Waterfall Management Company, and they're leading the way internationally. You heard 126 countries. And these guys are getting the top award year after year. It's just absolutely amazing. So when people again say to you, oh, South Africa, I've got to get out of here. It's such a shit place. Just look at what can be done when a bunch of smart people get together and decide we're going to do this right. Yeah, absolutely. We can win the world's best title. title over and over again. So let's keep doing this. You are doing excellent work by international standards. I'm thrilled to have you here on the show this morning.
It's been so great to be here. Thank you.
No, it's really, it's such a pleasure. And we'll see you on stage in We Will Rock You, which is on at the Peter Tsarin Theatre in Monte.
At the Teatro.
Sorry, the Teatro.
The Teatro at Monte from the 12th of March to the 16th of April.
Showtime for tickets.
Showtime.co.za.
And we will also hopefully have you back here on Cliff Central soon with Spotlight. You and Alan Ford got to get your act together and bring that show back.
So come on, Alan Ford. Come on. Yeah, we would love to do that. Thank you.
All right. Very nice. But there we are. Craig Urbani, everybody. Leanne, don't die of COVID, okay?
I'm going to focus, as I always do every day, on living.
Just
every
minute, that's good.
Every day.
That's good. Yeah, correct.
Feel better, Leanne. Feel better.
Very, thanks, very nice. Guys. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Be good. Cheers. Bye. CliffCentral.com.